off and running on a midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster, Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing. And Tom, I am ready. I've been ready for months for seasonal weather, and I think we're about there.
We're on the cusp, on the brink.
mid-40s, actually, some of the lows next week. I will take it because it has been a long, long summer in so many ways, as many of you who follow our program know. It is Wednesday. It's November the 8th. It's 2023. It's the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. They have the naming rights to our studio, and I'm glad they do, on the Bustos Media Tucson campus, where we have under one roof now five radio stations. This radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's source for trusted local news and talk, worldwide live listening on my website, which is also the place for all of our podcasts, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The Buckmaster Show contributor on health is Dr. Victoria Mazes. Dr. Mazes is executive director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona, where she is a professor of medicine and public health. She's internationally recognized as a leader in integrative medicine, and she is committed to helping individuals lead healthier lives and pioneering change efforts that solve the American healthcare system problem. She's editor of the Oxford University textbook, Integrative Women's Health, and author of Be Fruitful, The Essential Guide to Maximizing Fertility and Giving Birth to a Healthy Child. Dr. Mazes co-hosts the podcast Body of Wonder with Dr. Andrew Weil. You can follow her on Twitter at Dr. Mazes or find her at accim.org. Dr. Mazes, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Bill.
Well, just in time for the holidays, a story that reinforces why, Dr. Mazes, we crave sweets so much.
Yeah, not necessarily just sweets either. Like, I have to say, I have this potato chips problem, which are salty, savory, crunchy, right? And if they're in my house, it's very hard for me to leave them aside, so I just don't bring them into my house.
You like those ones that that have kind of the little sea salt and kind of make it taste so good, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you know, how does it do that?
I don't know.
You know, that's what we call an ultra-processed food, where the food scientists have figured out how to maximize sweet, salty, crunchy, fat, you know, all of those flavors. And some people even say that these foods are pre-digested. You know, I mean, there are foods where you used to have to chew them, and now they kind of melt on your tongue, you know. And the foods that are really, really easy for you to consume like that change the way in which your brain experiences them, almost like an addiction.
Well, there's an increase in dopamine, isn't there, with some of these foods?
That's exactly right. And so dopamine, as listeners will know, is a neurotransmitter, and it's made in your brain. It's also made in your gut. And it plays a role in the reward center of your brain. It's involved in many things, but also in addiction.
Well, and we're not talking just a small increase in dopamine, according to this article that was in, I believe, National Geographic.
Uh-huh.
Foods rich in fat and sugar can increase the dopamine levels by 200% above normal levels.
Yeah, and you know, that's not so different from medicines and drugs, you know, things we all consider addictive. For example, cocaine can triple dopamine levels. So, you know, fat and sugar double it, and cocaine triples it. Methamphetamine, highly addictive, that increases it by, 10 times. So it's really a significant bump in dopamine levels, which is kind of why it's hard to not keep reaching for more.
I think we need to get into the whole sea change and the way food we eat has changed over the years, Dr. Mazes.
Yes, agreed. So, I mean, when we talk about eating foods with fat and sugar, you know, I think that we have to remember that people, for example, have been making pies for the holidays forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a pie is a new food. But when you make pie at home, you're using very few ingredients, you know, flour and butter, a little bit of salt to make, you know, the crust. Using, you know, fresh fruit, perhaps, you know, in the pie filling. I mean, these were the ingredients that people used. Whereas when you're buying it from the store, all of a sudden there are a lot of what we call ultra-processed foods. And these are things that are hydrogenated fats, they're artificial flavors, they're emulsifiers, which help keep oil and water bonded together, they're food stabilizers. And so when we create these ultra-processed foods, one, we digest them faster, and anything that is absorbed into the body more quickly, including food, has more of a risk of being addictive. That's why methamphetamine is more addictive than cocaine, which is more addictive than, you know, something that would be very slowly absorbed into the body. So there's a big difference between a homemade pie and a pie that's designed to have a long shelf life and be, you know, perfectly food and shelf stable for a long time.
Well, we're getting so used to the ultra-processed foods that
you
wonder when someone sits down for Thanksgiving and they're having one of the pies, we hope one of our pies from Mona's Danish Bakery, but you wonder if it's made from scratch, does it taste different than the ultra-processed foods?
Well, that is a really good question, and I think the answer is, you know, it may depend on the person's palate.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot about things that affect our taste. So, you know, if you eat a pie that's been made in someone's home, when you come in, you may still smell the cinnamon, for example. You may smell that freshly baked apple in an apple pie. And, you know, that's going to give you some of the pleasure. You are going to appreciate the care that the baker put into it, you know, making it from scratch in their home. That may change your appreciation. If it's maybe your grandmother or mother or father or grandfather who made it, and they've been making it throughout your lifetime, so you remember it from your childhood, and that evokes certain pleasurable experiences. And so I think it's complicated, but the bottom line is that the food manufacturers, the industrialized food manufacturers, are studying the chemistry of these ingredients so that they do maximize the dopamine, because they want these foods to be addictive. They want you to keep reaching for another piece of pizza or another potato chip or another Coke or, you know, whatever it is. And so there's intention actually to get people to consume more, which of course is not good for our waistlines and not good for our health. The average American, 60% of their diet is from ultra-processed food.
It also translates into very smooth and velvety ice cream, as I recently recently discovered with a, I won't even name the manufacturer, but it was vanilla and cherry, and it just seems so smooth, and and I'm thinking, just thinking about it, I'd like a scoop of it right now. But but when you go back to the history of these ultra UPF, ultra processed foods, mm-hmm. started in the 80s, and there is a correlation with our health. We do see diet related mortality and disease increasing.
Yeah. You know, one of the most interesting studies was done a few years back ago by a researcher named Kevin Hill. He's a researcher at the NIH, and he actually brought people into a food lab at the NIH. So they controlled everything that went in, you know, every bit of food and everything that went out. And what they did was they offered people the same amount of nutrients, you know, protein and fat and carbohydrates, either as whole food or as ultra-processed food. And the people who were offered the ultra processed food ate about 500 calories a day more. That shows you they, on some level, weren't satisfied by what they were eating. They wanted to eat more. They gained, on average, 2 pounds over the 2 weeks. But the 2 pounds is a little misleading because some of them gained as much as 13 pounds in 2 weeks.
Goodness.
And so the way in which our body processes ultra-processed food is different. This is one of the things that kind of breaks the myth of a calorie is a calorie is a calorie. So, you know, an avocado, which is a whole food rich in fat, is very different than eating an ultra-processed food with a lot of fat in it. And so we see this in these kinds of studies that Kevin Hall does at the NIH.
It's very interesting about pre-digested processed food that maximizes the speed of the dopamine release. In other words, you take a bite, and before you know it, you're going, oh, I have to have more of that.
Yeah, it's so true. And, you know, we can think about the way in which do we really have to chew our food? You know, like, again, when people are eating whole food, say they're having a piece of meat, they probably are cutting it with a sharp knife and they're chewing. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you get a fast food hamburger, there's not much chewing involved.
No, there isn't. All right, we'll pause right here and we'll talk now about Mona's Danish Bakery, where they use really good stuff to make all of their pies. And that leads us to Thanksgiving, 2 weeks from tomorrow, believe it or not. And Steve and the team at Mona's are now taking your order for what type of pie would you like on your Thanksgiving table. Last year, they did a record 600 pies for Thanksgiving. So put in your pie order. And while you're at it, what type of dinner rolls would you want on the table? They can take care of that, and they will gladly take your order. Mona's Danish Bakery.com. Mona's at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, home of the Danish Kringle. And maybe a Kringle would be a great idea for Thanksgiving morning. As you watch the parade on TV or whatever, and or there'll probably be some pieces left over for the day after Thanksgiving. We'll take a break. More with Dr. Mazes right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, our lifeline presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We continue now with our conversation with our contributor on health, Dr. Victoria Mazes, Executive Director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona. If you're over age 70, chances are you have had hearing loss, pretty common, actually, hearing loss affecting 2 out of 3 people over age 70, Dr. Mazes. And now hearing aids have become more affordable and, I guess, more needed than ever before.
Yeah, so this is really good news. The FDA changed their regulations to allow for the sale of over-the-counter hearing aids, which otherwise could cost between $4,000 and $5,000. They're not usually covered by insurance. And so that really puts them out of reach for many people. With these new over-the-counter hearing aids, you don't have to have a prescription, and you can buy them from a variety of places, and the price is going to come way, way down. Right now, it looks like the common over-the-counter price is around $1,000. That's not cheap, but it's a whole lot better than $4,000 to $5,000.
So how do you know if you have hearing loss? I guess you would have to go to the doctor and determine if indeed you do and how much.
So that's definitely one way, although, you know, most of us know when we're starting to lose our hearing
a
little.
That's true.
People ask us to, we're asking people to repeat themselves. You know, we notice we're missing parts of sentences. You know, maybe we're turning the volume up on the television. So I think people, you know, begin to notice that they're not catching and they're really aware. One of the reasons it's become more urgent is that in the commission that looks at prevention for dementia, hearing loss has now been identified as a modifiable risk factor. Now, none of us want to end up with dementia, and there's, you know, a variety of things that can increase our risk, things like having high blood pressure, smoking cigarettes, being overweight, being depressed, being inactive, diabetes, being isolated, and hearing impairment is one of the things that can increase the risk, and it kind of cuts you off. It makes you socially isolated when you can't hear, and so you can correct that with a hearing aid.
And are they self-fitting, Dr. Mazes, these hearing devices?
Well, they are supposed to be, and, you know, some people have an easier time and some people have a harder time. In 2022, there were 8 brands of over-the-counter self-fitting hearing aids, and there was a study that looked at how well did people do, and most people found after 6 weeks, so there was a trial and error period of time, which, of course, there are when you go to an audiologist also. It's not, you know, day one that everything's just set perfectly for you. But after 6 weeks, people who bought the over-the-counter ones were hearing about it just as well as the people who were fitted by an audiologist. Not everybody is comfortable with, you know, adjusting it with apps, et cetera. And so, of course, there are people who are going to continue to want the services of an audiologist. But yes, there are self-fitting, and There are now some ways to track of the over-the-counter ones which are the best ones. So there's a vetting company called Hear, like hearing, Hear Advisor, and it tested 50 different over-the-counter hearing aids, and it gave a very good rating to 13 of them. They actually did see a price point difference. They said, you know, if the ones that cost around $1,000 usually perform significantly better than the ones that are under $500. So you might be getting what you pay for. As I said, that's not cheap, but it is better than the $4,000 versions out there. And then Wirecutter also evaluated hearing aids, and that's available for free on the New York Times website. And then there's also going to be a series of webinars put on by the Hearing Loss Association, and that will help guide people as well. So there are resources, and, you know, as anything that comes out to the marketplace and is new, it's still a little messy.
That the Hear Advisor, H-E-A-R Advisor, they are saying we're trying to be the good housekeeping seal of approval for hearing aids. It does sound like they're kind of a clearing house of good information.
Yes, I think when you have companies whose job it is to independently vet products, that often does give good information. Hear Advisor was founded by audiologists and also a hearing scientist. I don't know them personally, but it does sound like their goal is to look at the various products out there and be able to point people towards the best ones.
You know, I'm just wondering about the use of people wearing the headsets, and it's become so predominant. You see people walking down the street, they've got their earbuds on. I'm wondering if that is playing a role in perhaps hearing loss, Dr. Mazes.
I mean, I think that's a possibility. I have a setting on my smartphone that tells me whether the volume of my smartphone was in a good range or was excessive. You know, sometimes when you're in a noisy place, like, you know, near a New York subway or, you know, at an airport where planes are taking off, you end up increasing the volume because you're trying to hear over other noise. But it does give you feedback. Of course, in my youth, I went to rock concerts where the decibel level was certainly not good for my hearing.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. I may be paying for that a little now.
Yeah, you're talking to a child of the 60s here, Dr. Mazes. So, in the remaining couple of minutes, I'd like to get an update. How are we doing at the Center for Integrative Medicine, the Weill Center, in the new building, and what is planned? What kind of programs will make this very interactive for our community?
Well, the building should be opening in early 2024, which is super excited, and we will have a wide range of programs and announcements, including on your show, about things that people can come and experience, and, you know, we really look forward to opening our doors to the community. But I did want to ask if we could spend a moment as well on some things that we've learned about preventing long COVID. We talked so much about COVID starting to 2 years ago, but there's some interesting data about preventing long COVID I'd love to share with your listeners.
Yeah, we've got a few minutes. Let's go right at it.
Okay, so three things. One is Paxlovid, which is the antiviral medicine. And people who took Paxlovid within 5 days of a positive COVID test were 26% less likely to get long-haul COVID. That's one. The second is really odd in a way. It's a medicine called metformin. Metformin is usually used to either prevent or treat diabetes. And they found that people who were on metformin reduced their risk of long COVID by 41%. And then finally, getting vaccinated. If you've been vaccinated, that also reduces your risk of developing long COVID. So three things you can do. Long COVID happens in about 20% of the people who get COVID. It is not something you want to have happen to you.
Yeah, I want to go back to Paxlovid. It just, I don't know, I added the antidote. I mean, I'm I'm hearing so many people say they take it and then they get a little bit of a rebound. What do you know about that?
Yeah, so there's a lot of questions about that. Paxlovid is prescribed for 5 days, and there are people who believe that it may be better for us to be prescribing it longer, and that may be why, that we're just prescribing it a little too short in terms of not just knocking down the virus, which it does very effectively, but keeping it knocked down until, you know, you're on the other side of it. And so I know that it's still recommended for 5 days, but I also know, you know, for people who are at high risk or have been really sick, it might be something to talk to your doctor about for taking for a longer period, 10 days.
If you do get a case of COVID, should you wait a couple of days to see if it's going to be a mild case before you go on that?
Well, I think that depends on your age and your risk factors. People who are, you know, over a certain age, whether you want to say that 65 or 70, have a higher risk when they get COVID. And of course, if they're immune suppressed, they have a higher risk. But even mild cases do lead to long COVID. And so I think that tilts the balance a little bit towards you might want to take Paxlovid, not necessarily for the symptoms you're having right now, but as one more strategy to prevent yourself from the long COVID, which can be, you know, really devastating.
All right, Dr. Mazes, thank you very much. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you, Bill. You too, and happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you. Dr. Victoria Mazes co-hosts the podcast Body of Wonder with Dr. Andrew Weil. We'll be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio. Green Things, the place to go to refresh your garden on 13 and a half acres. Oh my goodness, they've got everything you need to get your holidays off to a great start, including thousands of poinsettias. They grow them right there. Homegrown, beautiful assortment of colors. Go by, check it out. Get your Thanksgiving off to a great start. Decorating with poinsettias from Green Things at 3384 East River Road, right by the Rito River. Their website is greenthingsaz.com. And while you're there, stop by Zocalo Village. Beautiful pottery, Mexican Talavera. There's some pottery that's coming in all the way from Crete, the island of Crete in Greece. ZocaloVillage.com is the website there. Green Things in their 53rd year of business, and they're open daily. When we do our telephone interviews, and we're about to do one right now, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, let's welcome the victorious, newly reelected Ward 2 Democrat City Councilman Paul Cunningham. Councilman, congratulations.
Thank you, Bill. It's great to be on. Sorry I couldn't make it in person. I've been a little under the weather. I've tested negative for COVID 3 times, but I've got a gnarly cold I can't seem to kick.
Well, yeah, I'm glad you didn't come in because I don't need that. But it is good to talk a little bit with you today on the day after. I want to reflect about the election. You and two of your incumbents, Lane Santa Cruz and Nikki Lee, easily reelected, and the mayor, of course, reelected, and the margin pretty much held up. It was about a 2-1 margin. What are some of your thoughts, Paul Cunningham, on yesterday's election?
You know, I'm still trying to process it all. It's actually not as surprising as it sounds. It's about on course to what we expected. It's a little higher of a margin than 4 years ago. There's a larger separation. There's a larger gap. But I don't know whether or not that's going to be changed with the other 30,000 votes that come in. I mean, there's still 30,000 votes to count. But in my race, you know, there's like a 26,000 vote margin. So it's hard the races are over, ostensibly. Getting a deep dive into the final results may give us some more information, but for now it's just it's about where, you know, it's just about what I expected as far as the first returns coming in. I think the one that everybody's kind of wondering about is the raise. I didn't really want to speak publicly on the raise because it benefited me personally, but a few things that I hope some people, this is what I tell people if it gets put on the ballot or something like it gets put on the ballot again. The amount notwithstanding and getting into the details, the raise that we're asking for is about the same amount as most mid-level government bureaucrats who are supervising more than five people. You know, it's about that range of a salary. The other thing I'd say is that it would help to do this job 3,000 to 4,000 hours a year. You know, you're always doing it anyway. I still spend about 2,000 hours a year full time on this job, despite having another full time job. The other thing I'd say is that there's all kinds of different nuances on, you know, what the amount appropriate should be. But if you take a look at what you know, if you got a 2% COLA in 1999 and made $24,000 a year, it'd come out to, you know, $60,000-$70,000 a year anyway. So all these things probably should be discussed. And I didn't really want to come out strong and say, hey, you know, vote for this raise because I deserve a raise. That's for the voters to decide. But I do think that it should be fair that people are paid what they're worth. And it's hard for me to go out. I want to fight for my union brothers and sisters. I want to fight for a living wage. I want to fight for all those things, except we get paid, you know, $10 an hour. And not that I'm not grateful. I mean, it is an honor to serve. I'm not complaining at all. But I do say in my heart of hearts, I do think we should get paid more. And so I think that it's something that I wish I would have maybe said earlier, and I didn't. You know, one of our council members at the last minute said, well, we don't need it to be that big. And that may be so, but that's getting into the minutia of it. The bottom line is that the city of Tucson citizens deserve a full-time professional council. And, you know, most of the people who serve on this council are, you know, have graduate degrees, have strong work histories, and do a really good job trying to live their life the best they can. And most of our candidates do, even the people on the other side who ran against me. They're all honorable people who wanted to put their name out there and try to serve. So it does make sense. The last piece I'll say is that, you know, our electorate in Raw constituency and everything like that is about the same as the county. I'm not sure whether or not we should be valued less than the county supervisors. So I thought it was a nice way to say, all right, they're about equal. And so that's what I'm going to say about that one race. That's the race that's in question. I know that the 20,000 votes coming in day of, anything can happen. I'm not sure what it's going to do to that race, but that's the race that's going to change in the next 2 days, whether or not it gets whether or not it passes or fails. That's the race that can be changed. The other races, you know, you got to be happy for TUSD. That is a school district that is really trying to make a bounce back. And I've been working my tail off on the east side, working at a school in TUSD and sending my kids to TUSD schools to try to have buy-in for that district. It went through some dark times, and for it to come out and get a win and some of the improvements in the high schools, including at Saguaro and where my son goes, Rincon UHS, and Tucson High, has been cooking with gas for a minute. I'm really proud to see what's been going on. I think there's some stuff that's going to happen at Palo Verde that's really exciting. And Palo Verde had a couple really good years prior to this. They had I think they hit a rough patch last year, but I know they're going to bounce back. So we're going to continue to advocate for our public schools. Long-term on our agenda over the next 4 years, we're still going to be tackling community health, housing, and wellness. We really have to have other people understand that the issues that we face in the next 4 years are systemic, and we can't thoroughly address them without the state government, the federal government, and the county government, and the city government all working on the same page, on the same job. And to some degree, we already are, and we're a few things away, but there has been at this point no magic bullet or magic wand that can just say, oh, we're gonna get through this crisis, no problem. And then the last thing I think is on the economic development side, I think there's going to be a transition, not just here in Tucson, but around the country for commercial office space and transitioning it to housing stock. I think that's something that if you look at the way the supply chains are, the cost of labor, all those things are going to happen in the next 4 years, where we're going to be taking a look at this vacant square footage, this office square footage, and saying, hey, what can we do to repurpose it? What's the need? And the need most likely will be housing. So those are some of the things that I'll work on. Another nuts and bolts thing I think we'll work on is some type of height formula so that we can build up in our corridors where it's warranted. We don't want to compromise what the neighborhoods have built, but at the same time, we do want to try to build up that density on our corridors and build up instead of out. So I think we're going to be able to do those things. On my side of town, I'm going to continue to work with Parks and Rec. I'm going to continue my youth programs. I'm going to continue my disability advocacy. I'm going to continue my water advocacy. Those are the things we're going to do on the east side. I think we've got an opportunity when we talk about water advocacy. I think we might have an opportunity to even set up a reservoir that could give us some better wet water storage and some recharge in some of our rivers. So these are the things that I think about every day. I'm proud of what we've done. And part of it was we were able to, in the last 4 years, we were able to backbuild community housing, unlike other cities. In the last 4 years, we were able to adapt to the ability where we weren't getting as many qualified applicants to be police officers, so we created civilian jobs. We were creative in that we created a navigator and community outreach group of individuals that hit the streets and meet people where they are. I think we were proactive in passing an ordinance and a referendum that allow us to pave every single street over the next 10 years, every single residential street.
And
we're dealing without raising taxes.
All right, Paul, I do need to take a break, but I wanted to say a couple of things about the TUSD. That's the first time in 20 years TUSD, a bond election, has gone their way. And I think people realize this was really about the infrastructure and getting bringing security up to our schools. So I'm not surprised on that one. I was surprised and continue to be on how close the vote on the pay increase is. And I'm wondering... And we do need to take a break, but a quick thought on your part. I wonder if this will, if this passes, attract more interest for candidates on both sides of the aisle to look at running.
Absolutely. It absolutely will.
All right, let's take a break right here. More with Tucson City Councilman, newly elected councilman. He first came to the council in 2010, and voters yesterday said yes to another four-year term for Councilman Cunningham. He'll stay with us for another segment. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It is our midweek edition of the program. And if you're thinking about something to do this weekend, the weather is going to be perfect. I'm looking at upper 60s over in Silver City, which means perfect time of year to get out and about. It's about a three-hour drive over there, and there's a lot to do, a lot of hiking activities, and just kind of hanging out. The beautiful Victorian architecture in Silver City is worth the trip alone. Check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org. There you will find very tempting ideas about things to do, great places to stay, and some great places to eat as well in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. We're talking with newly elected, he's been elected now to a new four-year term, Tucson City Councilman Ward 2, Democrat Paul Cunningham. So when we look at the issues that will be facing you and the council, at least over your next 4 years, water is at the top of the list, I think, don't you, Paul Cunningham?
Well, I think it always is in Tucson. I think it is globally. It's transitioned from just not just a natural resource, but to a true commodity. And we have to continue to be strategic in Tucson. I'm going to go out. I know that, so one of my favorite ones is people love saying, well, you know, we're going to run a pipe from Mexico or California and desalinate and bring it all the way to Tucson. And I don't think a lot of people really understand what that can do to our oceans, what that can potentially do to the balance globally that we have. And the health of our oceans is super important. And that's like the Alamo, as far as I'm concerned, and when what we try to get water from. I think ultimately, stormwater capture, runoff capture from the Catalina Mountains. You know, we always say, you know, Tucson, the basin that we live in, gets about a foot of water a year, and that's true. But we forget that we get runoff from both the Catalinas and the Rincons that are significantly more than that. So there's potential to capture quite a bit of acre footage of stormwater that we really have never really tapped into. We've never gone there. We don't have an SRP like Phoenix does. So I think there's some opportunity out there over the next 4 and 5 years as we develop our strategies. Moreover, we can take a look at natural recharge. We continue to develop those techniques and that technology. It's exciting to see how the Santa Cruz Heritage Project has developed, but also I'm really proud of the project at CAVSARP where we shortened the permeation time and were able to put thousands and thousands of acre feet back into the ground and build our aquifer back up, our water table back up over the last two decades. So we'll continue to do that. And then I don't think it's as dangerous to be talking about taking water out of the ocean. I mean, we just went through this with the Colorado River, where we took too much water out of the Colorado River, we compromised the actual existence of the river. Well, I don't want to do that to any body of water. So I think there's some opportunity there, and we'll continue to look at it. We have to do it in a way that is ecologically responsible, and we have to do it in a way that preserves our way of life. So I think we'll definitely get there.
All right, I want to talk about what Republicans ran on. They ran on the fact this is not a safe city. It's a crime-ridden city. Some of your thoughts on that, Paul Cunningham.
Well, again, I think that you have to look at things through a holistic lens. You have to look at things compared to what? I mean, we have multiple peer cities that are like us. In other words, their economy is about the size of us, their population, their metropolitan statistical area, their primary employers, they have a military base, they have a university. There are cities like us. And we are not a primary market. And we are not one of the top, we're not even in the top 40 metropolitan areas in the U.S. So to run around and compare us with those type of markets is a little bit, it's like saying, all right, you know, what do you think of the Tucson going a little old school, but you know, what do you think of the Tucson Toros playing the Los Angeles Dodgers? Or for the younger people, what do you think of the Reno Aces playing the Diamondbacks? I mean, there's a reason you don't. So it's the same thing here. Our peer cities are Tulsa and El Paso and Albuquerque and Fresno and Birmingham, Alabama. And those are the cities, Boise and Louisville. And those are the cities you want to look at and go, all right, so how are they doing? And what are they doing? And what are the metrics we're going to look at? Well, let's look at number of people under the poverty line. Let's look at education level. Let's look at employment and unemployment. Let's look at all these things, median income, median income per household. Let's kind of, and of course, crime rate. And then let's kind of analyze how we're comparing and figure out who's doing what better, and if what they're doing is working, let's try to duplicate that. That's how I go about this process in analyzing how we're doing. The fentanyl crisis has hit every single corner of the United States. No city has been spared, and no city or town has been able to come up with, like I said, or in the previous segment, the magic wand to end it, because it's going to take a lot more than that. I will say again that that issue is totally systemic. It's not just, we're not going to be able to arrest and incarcerate our way out of the problem. We're just not. Now, there's some things we can do that I think will empower people more than enable them. And I think there's some things we can do to make services a little bit more available, so that people who are just absolutely refusing to engage in any type of self-improvement, we can say, well, you know, but at some point you're going to have to make a change, or we're going to make it for you. And that's, I think, the true, like, I know it's so boring and wonky, but that's the true approach that everybody on both sides and what we're talking about want as working with folks, because everybody's got a cousin or a brother or a sister or a friend that's hit that bad patch, that hits that rough spot, and we want to be there for them. And so we have to balance that with, you know, quote unquote, the tough love piece too. And then of course the people who are actually a danger to us and a danger to our property, they have to be held accountable as well. And you have to hold all those things in balance. And you can't do that just with a city. It requires a court system and a county government and a correctional system and a jail system and a CRC. And it requires a crisis response beds. It requires detox availability. It requires, it's very systemic, and how you fund it and how it all fits together will be the new thing in this next 2-3 years. But I think there's a lot of cities kind of working on their models. I think they'll be fully implemented in a few cities, and then the cities will come back to each other and go, okay, this is what worked and this is what didn't. Okay. So this isn't going to just get done overnight.
All right, Paul Cunningham, hope you feel better. Congratulations on your victory yesterday. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Sorry for rambling, but have a great week.
Thank you very much. Paul Cunningham with us on the Buckmaster Show. That'll do it. On behalf of Mr. Cunningham and Tom on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster wishing everyone well.